is the Mix Zone podcast by InFront Lab. On this podcast, we speak with sports and innovation leaders from around the world about creating sport experiences fans truly deserve. For those who are joining us for the first time, we're the digital and tech branch of InFront Sports. At the lab, we put the fans first and use technology to improve their experiences by helping rights owners meet their fans at every touch point along their journeys. We work with all sports-related industries, from data to content, and everything in between. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Mix Zone by InFront Lab. I'm Marav Sevier, host of your podcast, and today we have something really exciting, talking all about fan experiences and giving fans the voice that, let's face it, fans really do deserve. So joining us on the podcast today, three distinguished gentlemen. First, we've got Robbie Lyle, founder and group CEO of AFTV and GFN, and Brett Best, who is CEO of GFN, and from the InFront Lab side, Sam Grimley, who is the head of global sales. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Thanks, Marv.
So first thing I'm going to do is, since it's easy to recognize my voice, I'm the only American, I'm going to ask you guys to first say your name and introduce yourselves by voice so everyone can tell who's who during this conversation. So Robbie, maybe we'll start with you.
Okay, my name's Robbie Lyle. I run AFTV and DR Sports, which is part of the GFN network. I founded them. We've been going for 12 years now. AFTV has been going for 12 years and, massive Arsenal supporter, as you can see by the, the shirt in the background.
And stands out behind you.
It stands out. sort of came up with the idea to interview fans and get fans' perspective on football.
All right. Thanks, Robbie. Brett?
Hi, I'm Brett Lotriet Best. So I'm the South African voice in the mix. So my background is actually in media and television, out of a background of really reality TV and then feature docs. And we came to the UK, and with Robbie, we realized that there was this incredible opportunity seeing what he had done in AFTV. And together we founded what is now GFN in 2017, the Global Fan Network. And the idea was to create the success that Robbie had made on the fan channels, but actually make it even bigger and kind of better and bring it into a broadcast model. So that's my job.
And Sam, last but not least.
Thank you, Ross. So I'm the Global Head of Sales here at InFront Lab. As you'll see, a massive Blackburn fan for my sins. And from my background of traditional sports sponsorship and then into sports tech, where I've known Brett and Robbie for several years in various roles, and watched from the sidelines as they've grown. So it'd be really interesting to dig into the details today.
So let's talk about that, how you've grown, because Robbie, you gave us a really quick lowdown of how everything started with AFTV. Tell us a bit about the thought behind it. What was the first thing that got you going? What brought this idea into your head?
Like Sam, you know, follows Blackburn. I mean, I've been following Arsenal all my life, massive Arsenal fan. And I used to always get very frustrated because you'd never hear from the sort of real fans that went to the game. You heard from everybody else, the ex-players, the pundits, you know, but never from the fans. So I sort of had this idea for a while, and it was kind of based off of a friend of mine who was doing a boxing channel where he wasn't speaking to fans, but he was speaking to boxers, but he was posting the content on YouTube and other social media platforms. And I was like, that could be a way to do that. That's the outlet to post it onto YouTube. And then I just was like, I'd love to be able to interview fans, you know what I mean, to get their opinions on football, because a lot of times it's a lot different to what the pundits and ex-players are saying.
I'd argue that most of the time it's very different.
yeah. And you've got to remember that fans, they follow their football club religiously, you know what I mean? Up and down the country, in the case of Arsenal, all around the world. So why do we never hear from the fans? So literally borrowed a camera, borrowed a microphone, rocked up at the Emirates Stadium where I'm a season ticket holder, and started interviewing fans. And that's literally me and my cameraman. And that's literally how it started. And we just started going to every game, every single game. And after every single game, we'd speak to fans and get their opinions, post the content up on YouTube. And it's just gone from grown from a two-man team back in those days to, you know, over 20-odd people now employed, you know, doing this. You know, I mean, free studios. So it's been, for me, it's in, like, every time I talk about it, it's just even more amazing for me, because being there from the beginning and seeing where it started from, it's been an incredible journey.
What was that like the first time you walked up to fans outside the stadium and they're saying to themselves, "Who's this crazy guy coming to talk to us?"
Yeah, I don't. I'll keep it clean, right? So, a lot of times, fans would be like, more or less, "Who are you?" You know what I mean? Because, you know, you used to be that's a nice way of putting it. I'll keep it clean, as I said. But, you know, the fans are used to being interviewed. If they are going to get interviewed, it'd be like BBC, Sky, whatever. And then we're turning up and they're thinking, you know, they're thinking, who are you? But I sort of always had this mentality that there's 60,000 people in the stadium, so I must be able to get at least 10 people who'll be willing to have a say, you know? We always got people, and again, like, it's incredible to know, like, those days we used to have to walk around the stadium and find people. Now we'll come out the stadium, there could be 500 plus people waiting to speak on the channel, you know what I mean? So it's incredible every time I think about it.
So what does it look like nowadays? Obviously, Brett mentioned that he came on 2016, if I'm not mistaken, to help expand it, founding GFN. What does it look like nowadays, Brett?
Well, I think in terms of what Robbie started, he realized, you know, early on that the fans hadn't had a say. So that exponential growth, by the time that we had met Robbie, he was the biggest football fan channel on the planet. And the concept then was, hold on, there's a space here for fan media, kind of more generally. There's a space for football fan channels, but, you know, from our point of view, we actually even looked, what we call it, GFN and Global Fan Network, is beyond even football, to allow fans to have a say in their kind of passion point and their, you know, and their sport. And right now, what I think that we're trying to do is invert the power structure, where the IP and the rights holders have always been, like, everything's been valued around about 90 minutes of game time. Everything is, and of course, it's, you know, it's the most valuable thing. But you then forget that fans are interacting and engaging with their sport 24/7, before the game, during the game, during the week, and there's this constant conversation that's happening. And I think the kind of the genius of what Robbie built out of AFTV and then later in DS Sports is the ability to then tap into that conversation, to actually into the fans who are speaking to one another and to each other. And that's what's, you know, created this kind of exponential growth, and the ability to see that actually there's a fan media space, you know, something that's much broader. And I think, you know, Robbie always says it to us, but people are always writing in to say how grateful they are for Robbie for giving them insight. 99% of their fan base is never going to get inside that stadium, let alone get to, you know, whether it be the UK, etc. But that fan base, to actually get an insight to what it's like to be part of the feeling, the vibes, you know, that's that experience of taking the stadium out to the fans. I think that's the kind of the black magic around it.
Robbie, were there any inspirations behind Arsenal Fan TV? Obviously, we've had 606 Drive Time for a long time, and I found a very interesting story about why it's called 606. Didn't actually have a name when they first put in the radio time, but it was at 6 minutes past six, and that's how it became 606. Danny Baker, interesting story. I got deep into a rabbit hole reading about that the other day. Were there any inspirations around, like, Arsenal Fan TV, in terms of you saw someone else doing something similar in a different genre, or you went, actually, that's someone I think doing things a bit differently?
Yeah, I think the inspiration for me was more a friend of mine who had a channel called IFL TV, which, as I was just sort of saying earlier, it's like a boxing channel. So he was my inspiration, because I saw the way he was doing his content And I remember one time he asked me, he goes, Robbie, do you want to come with me? There was a boxing fight up in Liverpool. I remember it was Tony Bellew was fighting. And he goes, do you want to come with me? Because my camera guy and that couldn't make it. So can you come with me and do the camera work? And I said, listen, I ain't got a clue how to work a camera. I don't know nothing about this. And he goes, no. He goes,
all you right have to do. It.
Yeah, he goes, all you got to do is just, I'll focus it. You just hold it. Right. So I said, okay. Right. So I went up with him and I just saw how he did it. And the process was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. You know what I mean? And I thought, you know what? I could do this around football. So he was more my inspiration. I mean, obviously, I watch a lot of football. I listen to 606, TalkSport, everything. I like anything football, I'm all over it. You know? So I took little bits from them as well, but mainly it was from him and from other guys I saw on YouTube as well. And they weren't really doing football, but I just like started to get into the fact that these guys are producing content, you know. But then a lot of what we started doing was a lot different to what anybody else was doing. Like, you know, for starters, the way we started putting out our videos where we were making each individual we spoke to, we made that into a separate video. Those sort of things have never really been done before. If somebody had done football and they'd gone out and interviewed, like say sometimes you saw a vox pop from, say, a TV company, it would be just like, 5 seconds, 5 seconds, five of loads of fans. Whereas we were we're going to give each fan...
Not saying too much in those 5 seconds.
Exactly. You know what I mean? So we're like, no, we're going to give each fan their own video, right? Because we've got the ability to do that on YouTube and let them have their say. So, but yeah, I think he was my biggest inspiration, really, in really getting me going.
So you say you built it up in your head before you went out with him. Go ahead, Sam. I'll jump in after you.
Is there anyone now that you draw inspiration from outside of football genre? You mentioned you watched a YouTube exam. Obviously, boxing, you know, got you into it in the first place. Is there anyone particular that, they're doing something different now? Which, you know, how do we replicate that from someone like Simon Wilson on the travel series to how do we pinch something from him and bring it into football?
Yeah. Do you know what it is, right? I don't have a particular person, but what I like to do is I like to watch lots of different stuff, not just footballs, like what you just said there, and see if it's something that can translate into what we do. So, like, for instance, you give a good example with the travel channels. So there's a lot of these really excellent travel channels. I've been watching one recently, which has been on Instagram, which is, remember that singer, Kellis? Kellis? And she's been going around Africa doing all these videos, and it's really, really good the way she does it. And what we've done is, like, when we now go and we do football videos abroad, instead of just going there and just doing the game, what we try to do is we try to show the country. So, for instance, earlier on in the year, we went to Ghana, and what we did is we showed Ghana for about the first 3 days of us being there through the lens of a football fan. So, and we went to meet the Ashanti King. We went to the Cape Coast, which is where they used to take all the slaves before they sent them all around the world. And it was nothing to do with football. It was just the fact that I'm a football fan that's really into football, meeting some other football fans out of there that are really into Arsenal and that as well. And we went to these historic places, and we showed that, and the content, when we do that stuff, always goes down brilliantly. Then it culminates in the end with actually getting to the game, showing the game, the fans, and all the normal stuff we do. So, and I've kind of taken inspiration off of some of these travel people doing in doing that, because I was just like, yeah, how can you make it more interesting? So it's not just, you know. And I remember one time I was over in, I think it was Belarus, and we went to, we before the game, we went to this museum where, you know, it's all about the Second World War. And, you know, I learned a lot there because I didn't realize that the whole of Belarus literally had been virtually destroyed in the Second World War and stuff like that. So we did a load of stuff on that. Again, just me going around in my Arsenal top taking. And then when I got into the stadium on the day, right, this guy come up to me, right, in like dark glass. He looked like KGB. Right? And he goes, you Robbie. I was thinking, hey, what have I done, man? I go, what's up now? You know what I mean? And I said, yeah. He goes, we work for the tourist board. And he goes, I want to seek you out because he goes, I saw your video where you were showing the museum and showing parts of Belarus. And he goes, really, really liked it. And he goes, we're using some of that, if you don't mind. He goes, we're using some of that stuff in our tourist stuff. I was like, wow. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you can take inspiration off of so many creators out there. And it doesn't always have to be in your own genre, in your own football genre, you know?
You're talking about a lot of projects here that sound like they have a lot of production and a lot of following fans and showing their sides. And you know, Brett, you talked about coming from the broadcasting industry. So I'm curious to understand, when you're making these bigger segments, these more in-depth segments, what is that like in terms of really showing the back and then also giving that authenticity to fans that you would outside of a stadium? How is that? How do you find that balance and also putting everything that you just described into, you know, a short form video, if I may, it's obviously not short form as in 5 minutes, but you're talking about following fans through Africa for 3 days. It's a lot of content. It's a lot of things to grasp and understand and to talk about and to show the world. How do you put that into these videos with the focus, again, coming back around to sports, which is not something you would necessarily imagine it coming back to at the end?
Well, let me start off. I think Robbie will kick off from where I'm going to begin. But I think, first of all, football does have this kind of universal language. I mean, it's a bit of a cliche to say it. I'm South African. You know, the reason why I every kind of event and television piece that I've ever been involved in, everyone on set is always talking about football. So when you start thinking of football as a kind of a lens and a language that you can actually reach out to a huge sort of portion of the population, that's the kind of the starting point. Then in terms of your question as to how do you then kind of make sense of that in terms of content, well, first of all, there is a lot of content coming out. At the moment, we're producing about 160 hours a month. And I think, you know, to kind of add on to what Robbie's kind of set up in terms of as a framework, is the idea is to give fans, but, you know, anyone watching the content, insight into the people, the places. It's a kind of a narrative. It's a story. Mm-hmm. And I think what the Nigeria trip, the Ghana trip, which is, you know, most recent, but I mean, Robbie's really been all over the world. From, I don't think there's a corner of it that you haven't kind of visited. And it's that insight of taking somewhere to a place they haven't been before, and then seeing through, in this instance, the lens of football, the people and their passion points, etc. And then you can get to cover travel, food, etc. So in a way, it becomes the place and the lens that you kind of see the world. And in that case, yeah, what you're doing then is creating content that is incredibly diverse, but it also speaks to people in such a way that, like music does, it absolutely can reach, you know, over a multi-billion kind of fan base.
Which is extremely interesting, because you're saying you're creating 160 hours of content a month. Now, what are the reactions that you're getting from these? Obviously, we have so many different types of content that you're producing, these longer form pieces of content. Ones, I'm assuming that you're still hanging, I don't want to say hang out, but you're still outside the stadium. You're still talking to fans in the most authentic way after games. I've got a bunch of questions. I'm going to shoot several of them at you at once, so feel free to answer whichever ones you remember. But what are the reactions that you're getting? You're saying now there's 500 people who are waiting to talk to you. Do they just come up and they already there start shooting out words because they just want to talk because they're waiting for someone to come and listen to them? What's that like in terms of creating these different types of content in the 160 hours? Also, what are the different types of content that you have there that you're continuing to upload and share with your viewers?
Yeah, there's never a shortage of people willing to shoot out what they've said. It all depends on the result. But listen, yeah, I mean, we still do, that's still like a real core part of what we do. And, you know, that's still, we're still at every game doing that on AFTV. But then we've got many other different types of content. We do a lot of studio shows now where, you know, a lot of debate shows where we're debating things. Like, for instance, now in the summer, the big thing will be all around transfers. That's the big thing. Like, everybody's wants to know who's leaving, who's coming to the club. It's like a frenzy around transfers during the summer. So we'll do loads of different shows on that. on DR Sports, we do lots of, like, we've got a very popular show called The Weekend Roundup, which is where basically at the end of the weekend, we look back at all the games that took place with loads of different fans. So we have like a panel of like, I'm on it, I was an Arsenal fan, you've got a Chelsea fan on it, Spurs fan, Liverpool fan, United fan, lots and lots of banter back and forth, all done in a, because we on that channel, we try to do football without spite. So lots and lots of banter, lots and lots of back and forth, but no spite in it, no malice. We got a show on there called The Best of Enemies, which is a really, really popular show, which that features me as an Arsenal fan and a guy called Expressions is a massive Tottenham fan. Obviously, we're huge, huge rivals in football, but friends. So, you know, and just lots of, like, there's the watch-along concept, which is where we watch games. We did one at the weekend where we watched the FA Cup final, and we won't show any of the game. So basically, all our content is original. We're just watching the game, and fans are reacting to us watching the game and discussing the game, and they're sending in their comments and etc. We've got a call-in show where fans, wherever you are around the world, you can call in to the show, because the good thing about the content that we do is that it's not geo-blocked. Like if you're on Sky or BBC, their content's like geo-blocked for the UK, but we can go right around the world. So we can have a call-in after the show, which our call-ins we do are in video, where somebody can, you know, they can call in from America, they can call in from Australia, they can call in from wherever they are around the world and speak about the game in video. And that's another really popular. And then we do evergreen content around, you know, whatever subjects. I mean, we've done documentaries as well for TV. I did a documentary on TV about racism in football from a fan's point of view, which was on ITV. That's now on Amazon Prime. We've got plans to do more stuff like that in the future. So it's just, I mean, basically our setup is basically, I sort of describe it a bit like it was Brit say with music. I kind of describe it a bit like a Hit Factory, like, you know, where we can just produce stuff 24/7. The way we're set up, it's all done so that we can make stuff of real high quality, but very quickly. Because in football, you have to move fast. You know what I mean? If Blackburn Rovers, to use an analogy, are just about to sign Ronaldo, you got to be able to speak about that immediately, right? You know, you got to be ready to go live and talk about that. If you speak about that, like if you was to, like, you know, spend ages setting up this, that, and spoke about that 2 days later, you've missed the boat because everybody's already spoken about it, moved on, realized that the rumor was ridiculous, and you know, so you've got to move quick, and that's how our setup is built. It's all built for high quality content, but quick delivery of that content so we can then post it. And that is the way, that is the landscape of football. You've got to move fast.
You mentioned Sky, BBC, the broadcasters, the media rights holders. Obviously, you can throw in the clubs and the sports leagues as well. They're, for talking about friends and enemies, they're both friends and enemies because you're working with them, but you're also working against them. What has been the challenges of working in this way and, you know, competing with them? Well, like you said, you don't have rights to actually show the games themselves, which is a benefit and maybe also a hurdle because you can't show the game, but that means that you can broadcast to fans that others can't. How has that challenge been? What have you done to overcome those challenges?
You want to do that on Brett or?
Yeah, well, let me start off. I think, first of all, the not having the rights is a benefit in that while it's something that you have to overcome, the way that it's been overcome is to realize that is you don't actually need the rights to be inside that football conversation. So once you've kind of made that realization, that leap, then you can start realizing that you can then own all the IP, all the content that you create, and then you can make it, you know, localized, you can make it global, you can reach fan bases which are often spread across, you know, the world and disintermediated from their kind of passion points. So in many ways, we become the place where fans can start to feel less fragmented, more like one space where they can, you know, meet their tribe. You know, they can come together. So I think that is a positive. I also don't think that the traditional broadcasters have seen us as a competitor. And actually, I think in many ways we're a complement to rather than a competitor to. Robbie, do you agree? I mean, that's my
five cents. I mean, listen, they well, what I'd say is that originally, I don't think they liked us very much. Right? So we weren't really very popular with the sort of broadcast media. I think they saw us as a bit of, you know, almost like, you know that phrase when they said the noisy neighbours? I think it was Sir Alex said it. We were those noisy neighbours. We were and I think as well that they kind of underestimated us, thinking that, you know what, yeah, these guys are out at the moment, few viral videos, but they'll disappear. But I think what's happened in recent times is they've realised now that, you know, we've kind of been at the forefront of a bit of a revolution in how football content is done. And now they're actually looking to do similar content to what we do. I got invited the other day to a BBC away day for all their staff, all the staff on 606, Match of the Day, everybody was there. They invited me to come and speak about how we do content, how we engage with fans. Which was really, really interesting, because I think 3-4 years ago they would never have done that. But they're seeing now, you know, I think everybody's seeing that, you know, there's a change in how people consume football. You only have to go into a room and watch a game of football with your mates. You know, everybody's on their phones, they're messaging each other, they're bantering each other, they're going back and forth, they're checking out memes, you know what I mean? That's different to how, you know, I'm an older guy, so when I was younger and I was watching football, you just watched the game and that was it. You watched the game, and when it finished, you might have had a, you know, me and my brothers might have been having a conversation about it, but that was it. But now it's so interactive, football, you know, that it's completely changed. And I don't think at first they got that change. And, you know, when something's new and fresh, you get a lot of resistance to change, especially from people that have been doing it a certain way for a very, very long time. They start to feel a bit
resistant to change.
I used to feel that they felt threatened, you know what I mean? Because, you know, they're like, well, who's this guy? For instance, like in the case of me, they might be looking, thinking, well, who's this guy? He didn't play football. He hasn't gone to study journalism in football. He's just a football fan. But you know what? I go to every game. I know my team inside out. And I've got an opinion on it. And everybody who goes to watch football's got an opinion on it. So I think there was a lot of resistance at first. But I do feel over the last few years, that really has changed. And you're seeing a lot of even our competitors making similar types of content to what we make. I mean, there's a show on Sky called Saturday Social, which they have me on a lot, actually, as a guest. I was on there about 2 weeks ago. But they use a lot of what they do on that show is what we've been doing for a very long time. So it's interesting. It's interesting that they are embracing it now.
Going back,
you've been doing this for a long time. Go for it, Sam. I'm going to hold on to mine.
Yeah, if you were to give your yourself 12 years ago some advice based on what you've learned growing the channel, what would it be?
Oh God! You know what? There'd be lots.
I'm looking at Brett's face after that question.
Lots of advice, because you know what the problem's always been, and it's a good problem, but nobody's ever done it before the way we've done it. So I never had. There's never ever been no one really to call upon to say, you know, is this the right way to do this, or am I going to get into problems if I do that, and should I do, you know what I mean? So I think, wow. I think I'd be pulling myself to the side a lot of times and saying, do this slightly differently. But then I wouldn't change anything, because that's been part of the journey, and that's been part of the way we've gone about building what we've done. Oh, it's such a hard question because
Brett, do you want to take a stab at it?
I have to agree that there's so much that we've done, and I think a lot of people look at AFTV and DR and say like the disruption isn't just in the content itself, but actually the whole business model is different as well. So we've had to go, you know, we're on our fourth version of the app from AFTV Plus. The amount of learnings and the amount of mistakes it's enormous, but you're iterating and changing and then adapting. You know, we went through COVID where there was no football, which suddenly we went on, you know, online, completely digital with some of this reality show that we had. And there's just every single month, but even every single week, you are constantly adapting because it's not just the football landscape that changes. It's the digital landscape, the broadcast landscape, the social media landscape. There's new platforms coming out all the time. So to try and be ahead of it, yeah, looking back, there's so many things you'd do differently, but you couldn't have known it at the time. And if I had to, yeah, there's a lot of things that it would certainly have been much cheaper in some ways. For example, how we present ourselves to brands. You know, originally we produce these incredible views, you know, with a very loyal audience, but. What you really want to understand then is how you can incorporate brands into content so that fans can actually benefit both from the content that we're making, but also bringing in, you know, kind of more revenue. And it's been an education for brands to learn about us and to understand that actually this is the place where the conversation is happening and it's a really engaged conversation. But then it's not just putting a logo on. How do you make content that actually takes a brand into the content and in an authentic, organic way so that it doesn't just feel like you're selling a Christmas tree of, you know, goodies. And again, all of these things, there are so many kind of paths that have been iterated, you know, on the job, which looking back, you'd have very kind of 2020 vision. But to Robbie's point as well, is like that's the journey, and it's not changed today. Like this week, there's a whole range of new things that are coming at us all the time, you know?
Yeah. And COVID, you know, I always think of COVID, and that's why personally, and Brett will know this, and everybody who works for me will know this, that I don't mind a challenge, right? And I don't mind. And I remember when COVID came, that was the biggest challenge. Because at first, when they said no games, I was like, no games, no me, nothing. We're done. I mean, right? But then I was like that for about a day. And then after that, I just started thinking, well, what do we do? And I just quickly realized that, well, you know, we got this big audience. Let's keep them engaged until the games come back, because they will come back. Mm-hmm. And I was giving a talk at this school the other day, and I said that I actually went and looked in the history books and looked at previous pandemics and how long they'd lasted. That's how deep I was going into it, right? And I was like, hey, they last about, it'd be over in a while, right? And I go, plus as well, economically, they've got to do something to try and pull it round. So the games, they'll get back games. I'm sure of it, be behind closed doors or something. That's exactly what happened. And then we came up, started doing these like watch-alongs, because we hadn't done watch-alongs before that. So we started doing these watch-alongs. And basically, again, I studied the rules and that and worked out that actually we're working. So we can actually get fans in a room and socially distance them and watch a game and still create content. So that's exactly what we started doing. I remember saying to the guys, listen, if we score, no celebrations, right? which would always go completely out the window when we scored, right? But, and we just found a way around it. And a lot of the things that we started doing during COVID, we still do now. We kept all of them because they were so successful. So in what, like Brett says, technology is what drives what we do. Like, it changes so much. I mean, the ability to go live now has just completely revolutionized everything. Like, the way you can just, like, on your phone, you know, you couldn't do that once upon a time. You know what I mean? What would that have taken? Like 10 trucks coming, wiring all day and stuff like that, outside broadcast. Now you just go live on your phone immediately. So what I tried to do with the help of my team, and we got some great minds in our team is just really stay on top of technology, like changes, things that change, because if you don't, you get left behind very quickly.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
You guys have both just touched on several topics I've listed for myself that I do want to talk to you about, and I know that we're already running low on time, so I'm going to do a couple quick questions for you. First of all, talk about this loyal fan base. How do you get to know your fan base, especially from when they're from all over the world? I'm assuming speak different languages. What it is that they want to hear? What it is that they want to talk about? What's your system of getting to know this global fan base?
Well, if I go first, I mean, it's just, like you said, we're talking to them every day. And one of the great things about the platforms that we work on is that it allows them to comment and interact with us. So we do that in a massive way. We treat fans as an absolute priority. So they feel like we're talking to them. We don't, you know, I try to always approach it like I'm talking to one person. I'm not talking to millions. I'm talking to one person in everything I do. Yeah, and we've just found ways to interact with them more and more. Like I said, going live, making them come on live, going to where they are. You know what I mean? Like this summer, you know, we'll be at the Euros. We'll meet fans. We'll be in and around the fans. We'll give them a chance to have their say. At the end of the Euros, we've got like international tours over in America, and that we'll be over there meeting those fans. So I make fans my priority. I think that's the difference between us sometimes and certain platforms and organizations who will turn around and say, oh, the fans are the most important person. And they're not for them. The money is, right? Whereas with us, I make it that fans are the priority. You know, they are the most important people on our platform. Obviously, we were able to generate income from that, but they're the most important people on our platform. And if you have fans as your priority, they're always going to talk. They're always going to talk to you. They're always going to interact with you because they can't get enough of football. You know what I mean? It's their love and their passion.
Absolutely. And like you said, unfortunately, a lot of people say it's all about the fans, but at the end of the day, it's also all about the revenues. And, you know, there has to also be a side of that on your end in terms of having to make revenue. As you mentioned, you have a team of 20 people. Where does that come from? You talked about the brand sponsors. How do you manage that on the side?
Just one other thing to kind of actually finish off what Robbie was saying as well is that just on a tech side, there's some very exciting stuff with AI I'm sure you guys are aware of now with, you know, voice cloning. I saw a clip last week where Robbie was in his voice speaking Mandarin within 1 minute. And to say, where are the new fan bases coming in? Well, you know, it's obviously you've got to create great content. It's got to be, you know, authentic and original. But with new tech coming on board, we're going to be able to access, you know, huge amounts. We're actually doing a deal at the moment, turning AFTB into Americ. We've got some deals in Africa, etc. So opening up fan bases like that. And I suppose to segue into your question then, that's partly how, you know, I think there's two sort of big revenue buckets from our side, and that's the brands. We want to be able to create content that is branded, but that everybody wins. The fan wins, the brand wins, and football wins. So that there's not a sense of it's an advert. It's more a sense of we're creating with a brand something that a fan wants to engage with. And if we get that mix really right, that's a win for everybody, because obviously that increases engagement, etc., and you can access brand budgets, which also increase what the content is and the production quality. And the second piece is also to look at broadcast models. You know, as Robbie mentioned, he's done a number of TV shows before. We've done the Real Football Fan show, the documentaries, etc. We're now looking at turning Best of Enemies into a television show for broadcast. And there's a kind of a moniker we're throwing around called social TV at the moment. So what we're making, we want to get closer and closer to television, because I think the old sort of guard of what TV was is starting to look more and more like what YouTube is. And the difference between a Netflix and a YouTube is becoming sort of narrow and narrow. And we want to be in that space where the difference between what social media, broadcast, etc. was and is just kind of closes that gap. We're actually even launching our own GFN Soccer TV, which is the first fast channel, so a free ad-supported channel with football, which has a range of, you know, not only our channels, but wider fan channels as well. And again, that's to your point about revenue is to look what the future might look like and how you can access, you know, multitudes more audiences on a really mass scale, and then idea of translating that and putting it out into multiple languages and multiple territories opens up massive, massive opportunities to reach people that before really you weren't able to broadcast to.
Mm. Well, Brett, you also just knocked off the next question on my list, which is all about tech that you guys are using. So thank you for that one.
Good stuff.
You're saving me on that. I do have one more question that I want to get to, unless Sam, you got something that you want to jump in, or should I finish it off with my last question for you guys?
I have one question. Like, what is your most memorable interaction with a fan over the last 12 years? Good or bad?
You ask some hard questions, you see. you know what? I will say, like, there was an interview that I did, and I think this interview is like a real sort of turning point for us. We were growing really well. And then I did this interview, it went completely viral. It went absolutely crazy. And basically, it was like, it was a season where we had a very poor season the year before. Then during the summer, it was a very frustrating time. We hadn't made any signings. And I could tell fans were getting very upset that the fact that we hadn't, you know, there were some obvious signings we needed to make and we hadn't made them. And we played our first game of the season against Aston Villa and we lost. And, you know, fans were not happy, right? The frustration boiled over. And there was one fan in particular, he just came on. His name was called Chris Hudson. And it was just that I think when he spoke for all fans. You know what I mean? He was very upset, but he was also very sort of articulate in the way he said stuff, that he was really upset with the board of the club. He was upset with everything. You know what I mean? And I think that was sort of the first time, you know, a fan had come out and challenged the actual club, the board. He put them all on the spot. Journalists, he mentioned everybody, right? And it went viral. It went absolutely everywhere and it had a real effect. And I think that was the first time that people were like, hey, these fans have got a serious voice now. You know what I mean? Because this guy's spoken and, like, you know, millions of people have seen this video. And, you know, so I think that's my favorite video of all time and most memorable one is definitely that video. And I even remember when he came up to talk to me, we were still putting the stuff together to start. We were setting up and he started talking.
He was ready.
He was ready. And I was like, mate, can you just hold on a second? Let's just sit. And he goes, what I've got to say, he goes, you guys won't even want to put it out. And I said, no, we will. I said, just be respectful of that, but we will put it out. And so it was just right. What everything he said was from the heart. He was a passionate Arsenal fan. And that's my favorite. That goes down as my favorite ever interview.
Well, I think after that, one of your favorite, maybe we end on that. And I'm going to hold my last question and maybe ask you guys offline in another situation because Robbie, Sam, this has been absolutely fantastic. And I think Brett and Robbie, what you're doing is incredible. What my question was going to be is what we should look forward to in terms of the trends that you're watching. But I guess just like everyone else, I'm going to have to just keep an eye on the channel and see what it is that you're looking forward to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, we got a lot in store. Like Brett said, you know, with all the tech that's out there, we're not scared of tech. You know, you'll hear people saying, oh, AI, oh my God. I'll be out of a job. You know what I mean? And stuff like that. I don't think it's going to go that way. I think it's actually going to be something that's going to be really, really good. And we're not scared of tech. We just like to embrace it and look at ways in which we can make the whole fan experience better. And also look at ways in which that can involve more and more fans into the content that we make. And I'm really excited, especially on DR Sports, which is the all football channel. Really excited about that channel because there's just so many great talent on there. There's so many great people of different football clubs. And I'm loving what we're doing on that channel as well.
Yeah, I think it'd be nice if we could redefine what traditional TV looks like. I think that's going to happen. And I think that an AI Robbie would be very useful because we need him on more things. So I could have 3 or 4 Robbies speaking multiple different languages at the same time. I'm all for it.
Brett, I think you need to start talking to those. You need to start talking to the cloning technologies, not just AI.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's coming. It's coming, Rev. It's coming.
Well, gentlemen, it was an absolute pleasure having you on. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers, babe.
That wraps up this episode of The Mix Zone by InfrontLab. I'm Marav Sevier. You can find me and InfrontLab on LinkedIn. Don't hesitate to reach out and chat with our team about sports tech solutions or just last night's game. Enjoyed the episode? Let us know your thoughts on the podcast. And don't forget to rate us. We'll see you next time.